Morning, Council. Everyone ready?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Regina?
Thank you. Good morning to all of you. May it please the court, the specific issue in this particular case is, does the circuit court have the authority to take a clear and unambiguous statute, apply the common law, and then rewrite the statute? My understanding from the state Supreme Court is the answer is no. The cases are cited in the brief, and it's briefed in much more detail than I'll articulate. Basically, what the state Supreme Court said is that where the language of a statute is plain and the literal construction is consistent with the legislative purpose, we are constrained to give effect to the plain meaning of the statute, even if it results in the derogation of a common law. We would be justified in departing from the literal construction of the statute only if it produced a result that is absurd and unjust. It is not our prerogative to overrule the legislature's decision by ignoring the plain language of the statute, and that's Serenilla. The state Supreme Court went on further, and what it says is where the statutes conflict with common law doctrines, the former, i.e. the statute, take precedence because the legislature, and I emphasize the legislature, is constitutionally empowered to change or entirely abrogate common law rules. And again, that's the Serenilla case as well as the water permit case cited in our brief. In this particular case, the statute itself was clear and unambiguous. What the city as well as the circuit court did is they went to the common law. And my understanding is that if the statute is clear and unambiguous, the analysis stops. The role of the judiciary and the circuit court is to implement the statute consistent with the intent of the legislature.
Counsel, what do you want us to do here?
What I really would like for you all to do is reverse the decision because, with all due respect to the circuit court and the city and county, the decision was wrong.
Do we decide the question of what the proper standard is when it goes back?
Yes. I think you have to, you mean the standard for the statute or this? No. My understanding is that all you can do at this point, because the statute is clear and unambiguous, is turn it around, send it back down to implement the statute. The statute says what it says. If you take a look at the HRS, it talks about the operator's duty in the context of due regard for the safety of others. Due regard, I submit to you, is a negligence standard. And the reason is negligence is the exercise of due care to not injure somebody or something.
Is there any case, Hawaii case, that interprets due regard as imposing the negligence standard?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
All right. So why is that necessarily the right result?
Because if you look at the ROH, which governs specifically traffic in the city and county of Honolulu, it uses the word ordinary negligence.
Right, but the statute trumps any conflict with the ordinance, correct?
That would be correct, except there's no conflict.
So if we construe, however the statute is construed, if the ordinance conflicts with the statute, the statutory interpretation controls.
I agree.
Right, so why does what the ordinance says affect how we interpret the statute?
Because the ordinance is consistent with the state statute.
Only if we construe it consistently.
That's correct, but that's my argument. It makes no sense for the city and county to pass an ordinance that is inconsistent with the state law. I refuse to believe that any legislative body is going to do something like that. It doesn't make any sense.
They do it.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think they do it intentionally. They may do it by mistake, and I grant you that. But I don't believe that's the intent here. And again, my only argument, I agree with what you said, the HRS is going to govern, no question, no dispute, no argument. The issue is, what about the ROH, though? We can't simply disregard it. And again, I submit to you, the ROH talks about ordinary language to
be consistent. So you think we should give some deference in interpreting the state statute as to how the city interpreted or what the standard imposed by the city in a similar circumstance?
Yes. Exactly. I believe so because I believe that we cannot just disregard what the city council did because in and of itself, it's a legislative body. So again, if you put the two together, what they're talking about is negligence. If they wanted to talk about malice, which is what the standard, the city as well as the court wants to impose, it would have said malice. And there's a big difference between malice and due regard.
Let's go back to the statute. You know, I agree with you that the statute controls and trumps common law. That to me is a given. And I don't know how a very respected judge missed that, although I just don't know. But where I disagree with you, I don't think the statute's clear and unambiguous. The problem I have with the statute is at one point it says duty to drive with due regard for the safety of all persons. If it ended there, I would agree. It's clear and unambiguous. But then it says, nor shall those provisions protect the driver from the consequences of the driver's reckless disregard for the safety of others, which is essentially malice. It's a different standard, you know. And so, yeah, reckless disregard is a different standard of review than mere negligence, right?
I agree with that.
So they're both together in the same sentence. So what does this reckless disregard mean? Why shouldn't we review a summary judgment, whether it's a genuine issue of material fact as to whether there was a reckless disregard, you know, for the safety of others, as opposed to just whether or not there was due regard? They're different. So to me, it's not clear and unambiguous. So how do you read that?
Sure. I think first, we're talking about due regard, let's call it the negligence standard for lack of a better description, versus reckless. I agree, they're different standards. If I recall that statute that you're looking at correctly, what it says is negligence or, I thought it was in the disjunctive.
And I could be wrong. Nor.
I'm sorry?
Nor.
Right. So it seems to me that either one does not excuse the driver from that type of conduct, either negligence or reckless conduct.
Well, if it were due regard, then that certainly takes care of reckless.
I'm sorry?
I mean, if you have to due regard, it's clearly a different standard than reckless.
So I agree.
If you're driving with due regard, you're certainly not being reckless. But you could be reckless and not have due regard. I mean, they're both there. There seems to be an inconsistency in the language. What do we do about that?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding something here. That's where I'm having a problem in terms of why negligence and due regard are inconsistent.
No, negligence reckless. And due regard are consistent.
I mean,
negligence and reckless.
Yes. That's what I'm having a problem
reckless
with.
Reckless comes within the common understanding of malice.
I disagree with that, and the reason for it is that my understanding, my limited elementary understanding of malice is that you have to have some evil intent to do something. That's my understanding of malice.
All right, but even you would concede that negligence and recklessness are different standards for torts.
Yes, I agree.
All right, so why would a statute include both, impose in the same statute a negligence standard and a recklessness standard? Wouldn't they pick one or the other? Why under your construction of the statute, does the provision have two different tort standards as the governing duty of care?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for you.
That's not clear, is it? Isn't that somewhat ambiguous?
Well, in terms of the different standards, I agree it's there. I don't have a problem with that, though, because I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I don't think that means that the statute is ambiguous. For example, down at the lower courts where the rubber meets the road, you routinely plead negligence as well as reckless conduct. You know, one leads to a different type of damages. That's
the standard of proof is different for each.
I agree.
Damages are different for each.
I agree. And the negligence standard naturally is a lot easier to prove than the reckless standard, and certainly a lot easier than the malice standard. But again, in terms of the difference between reckless and malice, I don't believe they're the same things. But again, in the context of the statute, even if you say, okay, we have negligence and we have reckless, where in the statute does it say malice that allows the court to go use the common law and rewrite the statute to impose malice?
Well, under your interpretation, though, if it's negligence and recklessness, we would never get to recklessness, right? Because you would always find someone liable for negligence.
Correct. I think what you're saying is that because reckless is a higher standard,
right,
you've already proved negligence, and that in part is true.
So that makes the statute ambiguous, right? What is the legislature thinking I mean, if we're construing this provision as imposing a duty of care for emergency vehicle drivers, why would the legislature put two different standards as a duty of care?
Well, I guess I'm guessing at this. You know, after giving the last 3 minutes when I said I don't know, I'm guessing at this. It's a total guess, you know. And I don't have any support for this either. You have one standard, which is negligence. I don't know if out of an abundance of caution, the legislator wanted to make sure that, hey, even if you're reckless, you're still responsible. I don't know if they wanted to clarify that way, but again, I'm guessing at that. They may have recognized that there are two different standards, and if you're reckless and it's not in the statute, you're not going to be responsible because reckless is different from negligence.
Okay, I got another question. The phrase is actually due regard for the safety of others. All right. What does due regard mean? The regard that's due? Isn't that whatever? Why is that a standard at all?
Because
the regard that is due. Due in what situation? Why couldn't that be reckless? In other words, why couldn't the regard that is due under this provision mean recklessness, given the rest of the statute refers to recklessness?
Because it would be redundant. And also, if you take a look at the definition of negligence, it's the exercise of due care. And I submit to you that's what the legislature was after. The exercise of due care, that's your negligence standard.
They didn't do it very well, right? Because they could have said due care, or they could have said negligence for that matter.
Conceded. Like Justice Foley said, the legislature makes mistakes all the time, you know, and it may or may not be in this particular case.
This is a model act, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't this law didn't initiate as a model act? In other words, one that other states have adopted?
I believe so.
So can we look to other states and how they've interpreted this distinction between the negligence and reckless standards?
If you decide or if you determine that the statute is vague and ambiguous, yes, I believe you can. But again, my own personal feeling is that looking to other states is really just for guidance. I think that we should create our own laws and we should interpret our laws. And who's better to interpret the Hawaii legislative intent and the city and county than the state Supreme Court or the ICA? I really don't, and I never did, go with the fact that you rely upon other states to interpret our laws. It's okay to look for guidance. I don't have a problem with that. But relying upon another state to interpret our Hawaii laws, not the federal laws, our own Hawaii law, to me is, I just don't like that idea or that concept.
Now, if the standard is recklessness, would you concede that summary judgment was appropriately granted?
No, because reckless is a much lower standard than malice. I don't believe that reckless involves evil intent.
Reckless disregard. So what's the genuine issue of fact as to whether the police officer, in the circumstances of this case, engaged in reckless disregard for the safety of others?
The question of fact is whether or not, from this lane where he should be going straight, he cut recklessly into Mr. Pagosa's lane. That's the question of fact as to whether or not the police officer was reckless. And keep in mind, when we talk about reckless, we're not talking intentional conduct. That's a different standard. Okay. Intentional conduct is a higher standard of care than recklessness. You know, recklessness is knowing the circumstances and taking a shot or taking the chance anyway. That's reckless. So in terms of your question about the question of fact, that's what it is. Now, I don't know if I should go on or if you have some more questions about the statute. I'd like to turn to the case law, if I may, just for a short bit. The cases cited by the city, and I believe relied upon by the circuit court, has absolutely nothing to do with the traffic statutes or the county ordinance. I submit to you that all of the cases cited by the city, none of them specifically deal with a statute or law that makes a person responsible for negligent conduct. None of them. They're totally different. They don't have anything to do with our situation here. Again, I understand from listening to you all and from the questions, there may be a question about the ambiguity of the statute. I didn't think there was an ambiguity, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'll walk out of here this morning learning something. But again, in the context of where the court goes, my limited understanding, like you said, we all get it. You don't jump to the common law unless there's an ambiguity in the statute. And I guess the question in this particular case is there an ambiguity or not? And I submit to you that there is not. And the reason for it, there's nothing in the statute, zero, the HRS or the ROH that talks about malice. And if the legislature wanted to impose a malice standard, which is what the circuit court did, it would have done so. And it didn't.
Well, in other words, there's no legislative intent concerning the application of conditional privilege or qualified privilege to this emergency vehicle situation.
Yes, and the reason there's nothing about it is the statute is plain and unambiguous. That's why. I mean, Mr. the city pointed out that we couldn't find the case that said that the laws are going to trump the statute. We don't have to. That's backwards. The first hurdle to me is the ambiguity of the statute itself. Without it, you don't get to the common law. You don't get to the legislative history.
Now, you're relying upon the principle that the statute can trumps the common law.
Yes.
Does it matter the sequence in which the common law rule was adopted? In other words, as I look at the statute preceded the Hawaii Supreme Court case on conditional qualified immunity. Does that matter?
No.
Because?
Because if the state Supreme Court wanted to set aside or overturn the statute, I believe it would say so. This conditional immunity applies to every single law in the state of Hawaii and the city and county of Honolulu. They should have done that. And I understand when you write decisions, you're limiting to the specific facts of the case. But in the context of your question, I don't think it matters. Because you start with the proposition that the law is valid. Until the Supreme Court says this law is invalid or some portion of it is invalid, it's valid. And again, I'll defer to you, Justice Foley. I mean, I'm no constitutional scholar. I'm no scholar at all. But I assume that this has something to do with the separation of powers doctrine. The legislature writes the law, judiciary interprets and implements consistent with the legislative intent. That's my limited elementary understanding of how the separation works. And I believe that that's what this is all about. And I noticed that my yellow light is on. Sorry, I was just checking how much time I have. Do you have any more questions? I'd like to save 10 minutes for rebuttal if I may.
All right,
thank you.
Mr. Moran?
Thank you. I think the question before this court is not the one that I expect to disagree. The question before this court is, was the motion for summary judgment properly granted? That's what we are to review. What was before the circuit court when the issue was presented to her?
If the standard is negligence, do you concede that there are genuine issues of fact?
But the standard isn't negligence, right?
Well, if it is.
If the standard is negligence, then we have some issues to talk about. Yes, I agree with that. But that's not the standard.
How about if your standard were recklessness?
Well, it's interesting. I know that your questions to Mr. Agena concerned that. Let me sort of roundabout way try to answer that. You are correct, Your Honor, Judge Reifert, that it is out of the Uniform Traffic Code, I think 11-106. There has been some confusion in the application of the particular traffic code, and the reason for that is that some language talks about whether very very specific language that we're talking about, namely, has the duty to drive with due care for the safety of others, of all persons, and the consequences of the driver's reckless disregard for the safety of others has caused confusion. There are a number of cases in that one where states have immunity statutes for people like this, and others where they do not. We are a state that does not have an immunity statute, so therefore, we have to either go to the statute itself or we go to the common law. And in this case, the common law.
Don't the majority of other jurisdictions apply the negligence standard?
No, what they apply is reckless disregard. You know, and with respect to the language.
But where do you get that from?
Basically, sort of the summary of the cases. I have a series of cases. This issue really wasn't briefed to the court in what both sides presented to the court. It was more a question, was the summary judgment properly granted.
Well, you cited some cases from other jurisdictions that cited the reckless standard.
Yes.
Right, so
yes.
You must have done some research in the area.
Yes. Say again?
You must have done some research in the
yes.
area.
Yes, yes.
But there's a Texas case that refers to the majority rule being negligence.
I disagree with that. I think there some say negligence, some say reckless. I think that if you apply our language in our statutes, they talk about reckless disregard for the safety of others. I don't see that we go to the lower standard. I don't find that in the language.
How do you interpret the phrase "due regard for the safety of all persons"?
I think it's an admonition. I would point to the court. There was a case that in the research that came up. It was Rochon, R-O-C-H-O-N, versus State. It's a Vermont case in which the court said, citing a Texas case, that we agree with the observation of the Texas Supreme Court, which had somewhat similar language, that any construction of this section to impose a standard of care less than recklessness would make the reckless disregard clause ineffectual surplus.
I think that's the Texas case that said the majority rule is negligence.
Though. Yes, yes. But look at our statute. Our statute says due regard. I know that Moran on law doesn't...
Counsel, let me just, regardless of majority and minority, you know, we look, you know, for judicial guidance and we make our own policy determination. Regardless of whether the lower court addressed this, our standard of review for summary judgment is de novo.
Yes.
So we can address the statute even though the lower court didn't.
Yes.
And we're faced with clearly some ambiguity, and the statute's going to control, not the common law, I can assure you. So how we construe this statute is going to control the outcome in this case. So give us a good argument why we should go with the jurisdictions that take recklessness as opposed to the jurisdictions that take negligence under this uniform statute. Tell us.
My answer to that is as follows. When you say reckless or due regard for the safety of others, that's an admonition to advise those emergency vehicle operators that they have been given a privilege. And the privilege is, as we know, a different direction, different speed, drive on the shoulder of the road, things of that nature. And that you are to drive with due regard for that, for the safety of others. And if you drive in a reckless, irresponsible, damned if the consequences, then there will be consequences to you. You will not get the protection or the privilege that's afforded by this particular statute. I agree with the court with respect to some of the confusion, and I think frankly some of the loose language in the city ordinance. But I agree that the state law will trump that. And in a way, they are not inconsistent, because if the standard is going to be reckless disregard, that, you're right, that is close to probably a first cousin, but not a sibling, of malice. But it is a higher standard than negligence. No matter how you cut it, it's not negligence, but it is some kind of reckless conduct, some kind of indifference, some kind of not caring for the consequences. And so that would be my argument, is that it's not a negligence standard. It is a higher standard.
Didn't the amendment of the statute to broaden the scope of it to apply not only to, it used to be that only police officers in pursuit of a law violator would qualify under the statute. Then it got broadened to include any official action by the police officer. Doesn't that argue against imposing the higher recklessness standard? The fact that the scope of this provision has been broadened.
I think not, Your Honor, and the reason, why do we grant these privileges? We grant these privileges because the police or the emergency people, the responders, are in a situation which requires not to necessarily follow the speed limit, not to follow the traffic light, but rather because of what they do, their particular job to...
But it's been broadened to the point that it doesn't necessarily confined to what we view as emergency situations. For example, the statute would apply, say a detective investigating a white-collar case, had to go interview a witness. And then in driving to the witness's house, rear-ended someone. Wouldn't this statute apply to that conduct?
I believe the answer is yes, except that.
So you're saying the legislature?
This particular statute is for emergency vehicles. That particular detective says for authorized emergency vehicles. We're talking about 291C26.
Right, but it says it applies to a police officer and vehicles used by police officers while in the performance of a police function. Wouldn't interviewing a witness be a police function? So if that officer, in going to interview the witness, rear-ended someone, unless the person rear-ended could prove recklessness, there would be immunity for the officer and the city?
The officer is in the performance of his duty. He's entitled to the protection.
So your answer would be yes. In my hypothetical, the officer who rear-ended someone would be immune from suit unless you could prove that the officer acted recklessly.
He would not. Talking about he would not. And the question then becomes, you know, is the employer, is the city, he's acting in the course of scope of his employment.
Right. But your position in this case is that if the officer is immune, then the city is immune under respondent.
And that's been conceded by the plaintiff.
All right.
In their brief. So, but I do think that the issue before this court is what was before the circuit court. And look at the circumstances. This is a fender bender. This is nothing that if malice is the standard, or if reckless conduct, which is the, as I say, the first cousin of malice, look at the facts of the particular case. You've got a police officer in the course and scope of his duty. There is, as you know, an affidavit or declaration that the plaintiff submitted 2.5 years later, and I can go through the very specifics of that, which the plaintiff basically tries to create by declaration an issue as to the malice of the officer. And as we know, you can't do that.
Counsel, before you do that.
On the evening in question, he gave a written statement. And the written statement said that I hit the police officer. I saw the light. I saw the red car go in front of me. I saw the police officer turn in front of me. Minor damage to my car, passenger right front, and I not hurt. He then comes out 2.5 years later and says he changes. Now, incidentally, in his statement, his written statement, he never talks about a siren. Now, 2.5 years later, he comes forth and he says,
but this is summary judgment. We're not talking about weight or credibility.
That's correct.
We take any declaration from him as true, or whether it's creating a genuine issue of material fact. And you've just created it yourself, saying he's all over the place. You know, what really happened?
What I'm saying is that is none of that comes to the level of recklessness or malice.
Okay. But negligence. If the standard were negligence, then there'd be a genuine issue of material fact.
Then that's a jury question.
So it really comes down to the standard of review.
Yes. Yes. I think this case is a standard. What standard are we going to apply? If it's qualified or conditional privilege, immunity, city, police officers out, city's out. If the issue is, the standard is going to be reckless conduct, you have to look at the facts of this particular case. If people cannot come, as you know, the HRS 51, excuse me, Civil Code, the summary judgment, 56. If reasonable minds can't differ as to whether or not the standard is, well, first of all, if the standard is malice, and if reasonable minds cannot differ that under the facts of this particular case, there is no malice, then the judge is perfectly entitled to remove it and decide the issue as a matter of law. In this particular case, that's basically what happened. Is that,
right, but we don't get to malice unless the conditional privilege applies, correct?
We don't get to malice
unless the conditional privilege applies. But if the statute, the emergency vehicle statute, prescribes the standard of care, we don't apply the common law conditional privilege, do we?
If the standard, give it to me again, please.
If we say the statute trumps the statute provides the duty of care for the officer in this case. We never get to the conditional privilege malice provision. So the fact that the trial court found that there was no genuine issue of fact, that there was no malice, doesn't matter, does it?
I would agree with that. I would agree that we wouldn't get to that. But if the standard is reckless, even the facts of this case aren't reckless. As reasonable minds are not going to, I don't believe that reasonable minds would differ that under the facts of this case, there was no reckless disregard. There was no, if you're at the malice standard, anything like that on the part of the conduct of the police officer. And that therefore, the judge removed the question as a possible question for a jury, and she ruled as a matter of law. And I think she was appropriate.
Now, to give us some context on the conditional privilege or qualified immunity, who does that apply to? Is there a limit? Does it apply to all government employees, executive department employees? Is that what it applies to?
Well, what it says is that non-judicial government employees, in terms of...
But is there only a particular kind of conduct that it applies to?
No. Look at the history of the cases. You've had cases where you've had city council members, city auditors, you've had defamation cases, you've had...
So a city refuse worker driving the rubbish truck hits my parked car, unless I can prove that they acted with malice, I have no remedy?
Well, as a practical matter, the claim is going to be submitted to the city and somehow we're going to resolve it, but that's not the issue before the court this morning.
But in terms of tort liability, I you have to prove that the truck driver had something against me or had acted with malice or had some improper reason for wanting to hit my parked car.
If you want to go to the remove the malice standard and you want to go to reckless, you'd have to prove that he was reckless in what he did.
No, the refuse driver isn't an emergency vehicle driver, so he's not subject to the statute. I'm asking you under your theory of conditional privilege or qualified immunity, I'm trying to understand this, that outside of this emergency vehicle statute, to what extent does it apply? Is it apply in my hypothetical, a refuge driver who's picking up the garbage and drives a truck into my car and I need to show that he acted with an improper motive in hitting my car?
I can tell you the city, as a practical matter, will plead that and surely will have to duke it out in court.
Say that again?
I say, as a practical matter, the city will plead that issue as part of our pleadings in response to the complaint. We will have to sort that out.
So if I accepted your argument, I would have to suffer the loss myself.
That can happen. That can happen. Yes, Your Honor. All right. So, but I want to go back to what I think is the issue, and we've gone down a street that I don't think was the issue before the circuit court, and that was the issue of whether or not, under the facts of this case, whether you want to use a reckless standard, whether you want to use a malice standard, that this police officer would be liable or subject to suit. Why would you want to create a negligence standard for non-judicial public officials in the course and scope of their duty, carrying out their government function, if anything that they do is going to be and subject them possibly to a lawsuit? That was the purpose of conditional or qualified privilege. That's the protection that they get. It interferes with government. And that's why Judge Patterson, when he made his decision in the Condo Medeiros case, said that you have to balance between the malicious government official, the innocent government official, and the party who is subject to an injury. And he said the balance is that the plaintiff is going to have to show malice and going to have to show it by clear and convincing evidence. Again, if that was the standard that was applied in the circuit court in this motion for summary judgment, that was perfectly proper. There was nothing to suggest that that was the level of conduct. There was nothing to suggest.
As a practical matter, in a situation like this where the employee is acting in the scope of his or her duties, as a practical matter, isn't it just the city who's ultimately going to have to pay the liability, pay the damages, not the individual employee?
If he's in the course and scope of his employment, and he is, you know, not done something outside of the course and scope of his employment, yes, the city is going to be basically take care of it, pay whatever the costs are. Yes, and we do that. We do that on a regular basis.
Counsel, following up on Judge Nakamura's earlier question to Mr. Agena.
I'm sorry, you have to speak up just a little
bit. I'm sorry. Following up on Judge Nakamura's earlier question to Mr. Agena, do you take any comfort or does it support your position the fact that the Supreme Court adopted the qualified immunity standard after the statute was in effect?
Yes.
And how does it do that?
Well, the qualified immunity standard is 1974, when the opinion was written. And it's interesting that, and I think I pointed out in the brief, that at the time that the opinion was written, in the last paragraph, Judge Richardson said that at a time where we have, basically it was Watergate, that we need to protect people and create a standard where those officials, public officials, that act in a malicious fashion should not be protected. And so that was the balance that they struck. Before that, as this court knows, it was absolute immunity for public officials in the course and scope of their duty. Well, that's not the case anymore. There's consequences, which brings us back to reckless, or whether it's reckless or malice. There are consequences when you do something which is disregard of the safety of others, you know, no conscience for the consequences of your particular actions. So it was a compromise, and that the conditional privilege is a compromise. And I don't think, if you look at, you go back to 2002, both the Senate and the House record on the enactment and dealing with 29C-26. The House record talked about that the purpose of the statute was to, in fact, I quoted some of the language. The purpose was to assist public officials, emergency vehicle people in the performance of their duty. That was out of the House. In the Senate, it said it assists law enforcement in the performance of their duty. There was no intention in dealing with the authorized 291C-26 to in any way curtail, but rather to expand in terms of the conflict between the state statute and the city ordinance. Of course, correct. The state is going to trump. It's a statewide traffic code. But if you look at 291C-162 and 63, they talk about that the idea of the ordinances in the city are to complement and to cover those areas that are not covered under the state statute. So it's an issue which I think we've gone down the wrong street, no pun intended, in this particular argument this morning. I think the issue is, what did the trial judge have before at the time?
Before you start, how do we deal with the ordinance? I mean, the ordinance is actually clearer than the statute. It actually says ordinary negligence. Wouldn't we construe that statute as an intention, at least by the city, to impose a requirement of, or a standard of care of negligence on police officer or emergency vehicles under that ordinance? I mean, is there any other way to interpret that statute?
Well, I look at that statute, and of course, we don't draft for the council, but that is not a model of clarity when you talk about ordinary negligence and due regard and reckless disregard. It's become something of a mishmash. But the ordinance is only to apply to the emergency drivers. In this particular case, of course, you've got a police officer. The police officer, all he has to have is a blue light under the city ordinance. He doesn't have to have a siren. He doesn't have to have a flashing light. All he has to have is a blue light. Frankly, no matter what happens in terms of this particular case, I can assure this court that there will be some communication with the drafting council for the city council, because I think that language needs to be clarified. I think that you throw in all these words and what do they mean? It means confusion. But at the end of the day, you go back to the trumping statute, which is 291C 26.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Rebuttal, Mr. Gannon?
No, Chief Justice Nakamura brought up a really, really good point. The problem with the city's construction of conditional immunity for all non-judicial government employees is that, like you correctly pointed out, if you have a truck driver on duty, gets into an accident, he's basically absolved from liability. What this is going to do is it's going to turn the automobile tort law in the state of Hawaii right on its head. Most of the claims are going to get wiped out. If you apply the malice standard, there's going to be virtually no claim against any police officer, no matter how bad it is in the context of driving an automobile. Malice, as I understand it, involves some evil intent. I don't believe the police officer, even if they're chasing somebody, is going to be evil and hit somebody intentionally. That doesn't happen. It's not going to happen with the police officers. The effect of malice and conditional immunity.
What if that police officer is going 80 miles an hour down Kalakaua and Waikiki?
Yes, I agree with that. But malice, as I understand it, has to do with some evil intent. So to me, in terms of malice, if he's going at 80 miles an hour and hits somebody, he's got to want to and intentionally hit that person. That's malice to me. He could be reckless by going down 80 miles an hour down Kalakaua with a bunch of school kids. I concede that. But again, if we're talking about the malice standard, you virtually wiped out every single claim against any police officer in the city and county of Honolulu. That's the effect of the decision. What that means is you have a police officer chasing somebody, you're hypothetical, 80 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour school zone. Let's say he's justified because he's chasing a felon, but you got a bunch of school kids that are 6 years old with a crosswalk, no light, and some kid comes running out into the crosswalk. Boom. The police officer is free because of conditional immunity. There's no malice there.
How about under the statute, would you consider your hypothetical that reckless or just mere negligence?
That could be easily negligence. It may or may not be reckless. And the question is, if it's reckless, do you get into punitive damages or not? Okay? But certainly it's negligence. Reckless, jury question. Now, in the context of our case, keep in mind what the court did. And I understand de novo review. There was no finding of ambiguity. There was no challenge to the constitutionality of the statute. The court went right from the statute, right to the common law. There was no argument in the briefs or anywhere that the statute was ambiguous or vague. Zero. There was an automatic assumption that the common law controls. You know. And again, going back to your questioning, you know, I understand the way you're looking at the statute in terms of due regard versus reckless. And again, you know, the word nor, N-O-R, to to me means that either standard, and the reason they have it in there, again, is there's negligence. Due regard is negligence. That's your standard of due care. This is first-year law school.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. I assume that it's a police officer on duty getting into a car accident is not an unusual event.
That is correct.
Well, how come this is the first case in which this statute is being, as far as I know, there's no Hawaii case that has discussed this, and this statute's been in effect since 1971.
I tell you why there's no Hawaii case on point, because the statute is clear. And in terms of why a city and county is picking on a poor, nobody plaintiff attorney like me, you can ask Mr. Moran and Mr. Pune, who's sitting back there. I have no idea. But that's my understanding, too. In all the years that I've been doing this, and I concede over the last 10 years, I've been doing mass tort and class action cases, I have never, ever seen this argument before. This is the very first time I've seen it. And I don't know how many cases I've represented with police officers or county people. You know, I don't know.
Applying the negligence standard.
I'm sorry?
Applying the negligence standard.
Absolutely.
The regular tort standard.
Correct. So again, in answer to your question, I don't know what the answer is, you know, why they picked this particular case. But again, I want to emphasize, getting away from the construction of the statute in terms of the public policy ramifications of this, if you adopt the conditional immunity, you've wiped out the tort claims for not just the police officer. If you are correct, Justice Nakamura, in terms of what's the long-term effect, you've given every single government employee on duty immunity. And that's not what the legislature intended.
Well, I'm not sure conditional immunity applies in all those situations, but if it did.
Yes, and I'm saying that's why it shouldn't. It doesn't apply in all situations. There are particular situations that are articulated, and the reason you have the conditional immunity in terms of a policy reason, like Mr. Moran talked about, I agree with that. I don't have a problem with that. But in those cases, if you take a look at the cases, the defamation cases, the excessive force cases, and for what I call wrongful termination, the intentional tort, and the firing of the, trying to get rid of that tax person, what they're dealing with are laws that are silent as to the standard of care. There's no definitive, you're responsible for negligence, you're responsible for reckless conduct. That's what these statutes says. You are responsible for negligent conduct in the operation of a motor vehicle. And again, with all due respect.
Wasn't that the law before the statute was enacted?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't that the sort of common law before the statute was enacted?
Yes.
So the statute meant nothing?
No.
It didn't change the standard?
The statute changed the standard is exactly what I'm saying. And my understanding, and I'll defer to you all, especially you, Justice Foley, my understanding is the legislature has the complete constitutional authority to override and change the common law. That's my limited understanding.
Well, I think your understanding is correct, but the point is, if this statute means that an emergency driver is liable under the negligence standard, I mean, wasn't that the common law before the statute was enacted?
For traffic?
Yes.
I thought it was, but listening to Mr. Moran.
But if it were, then what did the statute accomplish? It didn't change anything, did it? I mean, if it were the reckless standard, you know, they're giving the emergency driver greater protection. You can't be sued unless your behavior amounted to recklessness. But if the statute is just saying you can be sued if you were negligent, well, couldn't they have been sued if they were negligent before the statute was enacted?
If you're asking me why they wrote the statute, because the case law was clear, I assume it had to do with giving uniformity throughout the state for motor vehicles and how to regulate how you drive, how emergency vehicles drive, and how everybody drives.
But not liability wasn't the issue.
I don't believe so. I don't think so. I don't think that was the issue. It was to create a uniform standard for all drivers, carve up the exception for emergency vehicles, not in terms of the standard that they're held to, but in certain circumstances, they can disregard the traffic lights, they can disregard the speed limit in discharge of their duty. And I agree with all of that.
So your interpretation is, right, the statute created certain exceptions for speeding, going through red lights, illegal left turns, but then reinforced that the ordinary common law negligence standard applied in connection, in context with that. So although you can speed, if you're in a situation, you still have to exercise ordinary care.
You have to exercise ordinary care in the context of your speeding, you're disregarding the red light, etc. So if you're coming up to an intersection, for example, as an emergency vehicle with your lights flashing and everything else, you have the red light, you have a car in the intersection, it doesn't mean you can plow into that car. You still have to exercise due care under the circumstances. Under the circumstances mean that red light and you going 60 or 70 miles an hour, you still have to exercise due care. That's what negligence is, and that's what this statute is about. I don't have anything else. I'll be glad to answer any more questions, naturally. And my yellow light is on again.
Questions? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We'll take this case under advisement.